Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Katie Weaver, and Jill Robbins. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Alice Bryant and Phil Dierking will have this week's education report. But first, U.S. President Donald Trump is defending his absolute right to share information with Russian officials at a White House meeting last week. Trump pushed back against media reports that he gave Russia highly classified intelligence related to the Islamic State group. The president's comments appeared on Twitter Tuesday morning. He described his White House talks with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Russia's ambassador to the United States, Sergei Kislyak. Trump wrote that he wanted to give the two men facts pertaining to terrorism and airline flight safety. He added that he wanted to urge the Russians to greatly step up their fight against Islamic State and terrorists. The Washington Post newspaper said that Trump appeared to be boasting about his knowledge of a possible threat to air travelers. The New York Times reported that some officials thought the highly classified information was especially sensitive. They believed it had not even been shared widely within the U.S. government or with America's allies. The two newspapers and others said the information could put at risk an important source of intelligence about Islamic State and the method in which it was collected. A U.S. president has the power to declassify nearly any information, making it available to others. So what Trump did does not appear to be illegal. But intelligence officials expressed concern that the information could harm relationships with other countries. The newspapers reported their comments. Trump noted that since becoming president, he has been pressuring the Federal Bureau of Investigation and others in the U.S. government to find the leakers in the intelligence community. After the fact, published reports of Trump's interactions with foreign leaders have at times angered him. U.S. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster has denied the accuracy of the news reports on Trump's meeting with the Russian officials. He said that at no time were sources or methods discussed. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson expressed support for McMaster's statements. Neither official denied that classified information was discussed. Reports about the White House meeting has led to reaction overseas. On Tuesday, a European intelligence official warned that his country might stop sharing information with U.S. officials if it confirms Trump shared classified details with Russia. The official told the Associated Press that doing so could be a risk for our sources. The official spoke only on condition that neither he nor his country be identified because he was not permitted to talk openly about the subject.
Thank you. A measles outbreak has hit the Midwestern state of Minnesota with 50 cases reported in recent weeks. Health officials say at least 45 cases were among children in the Somali American community in the city of Minneapolis. Nearly all of those affected were not vaccinated against measles. Measles is a serious disease that can cause breathing problems, brain swelling, or even death. It spreads very easily among unvaccinated people. U.S. health officials recommend that all children receive a combined vaccine to protect against measles, mumps, and rubella. This combination vaccine is called MMR. But many parents in the Somali community oppose vaccinations because they believe they can cause a child to develop autism. A 2014 study by the American Board of Family Medicine found that 35% of Somali parents surveyed in Minneapolis believed the MMR vaccine causes autism. Just 8% of non-Somalis held the same belief. Autism, also known as autism spectrum disorder, or ASD, is a developmental disability. It affects a person's ability to communicate and do things with other people. The University of Minnesota reported in a 2010 study that about 1 in 32 Somali children aged 7 to 9 in Minneapolis developed ASD. Another highly publicized study from a British researcher in 1998 linked autism to the MMR vaccination. The 1998 study was later discredited and withdrawn by the British journal The Lancet, which reported it. Other research in recent years has failed to support the 2010 study's findings. One major study involving 95,000 American children was released in 2015. It found no harmful link between the MMR vaccine and ASD, even in children already at higher risk for ASD. Other American communities with low vaccination rates have also experienced measles outbreaks in recent years. Dr. Mohammed Haji Adan is with Regions Hospital in St. Paul, Minnesota. He told VOA's Somali service all parents should inform themselves about the latest research suggesting no link between the MMR vaccine and autism. The Minnesota Department of Health is taking steps to win back trust in vaccines. Two Somalis are now working with the department on outreach efforts. One visits mothers' groups, daycare centers, and schools to talk about vaccines. The other informs parents about autism and provides information about resources for special needs children. Minnesota health officials have requested $5 million in state money to deal with the measles emergency, as well as other recent outbreaks of tuberculosis and syphilis. I'm Brian Lynn.
Syria is denying claims by the United States that the Syrian government kills many prisoners every day. The U.S. government accuses Syria of burning the bodies of those it has executed in a large crematorium near the capital, Damascus. Syria's foreign ministry called the U.S. accusation a Hollywood story detached from reality. The state-operated Sana News Agency reported the statement. On Monday, the U.S. State Department said that as many as 50 prisoners are being hanged every day at the Saydnaya prison. It said the government of President Bashar al-Assad then uses the crematorium to destroy the bodies. It accused the government of seeking to hide evidence of the extent of the killings. Stuart Jones is the top U.S. diplomat for the Middle East. He said the government of Syrian President Assad has sunk to a new level of depravity. Jones criticized Russia and Iran for providing military assistance to the Assad regime. Those countries have supported the regime's six-year-long fight against rebel groups attempting to overthrow it. About 400,000 people have been killed in the fighting. Jones said the State Department had yet to present evidence of the mass killings to Russian officials. But he said the United States has had, in his words, an ongoing conversation with the Russians, talking about the problem that their failure to condemn Syrian atrocities and their apparent tolerance of Syrian atrocities has created. And we have urged the regime, we urged the Russian government to hold the regime responsible for these atrocities. Last month, President Donald Trump ordered a missile attack on Syria after the government's suspected chemical weapons attack on civilians. Jones said that the Assad government, in his words, had treated opposition forces and unarmed civilians as one and the same, committing widespread violations of international law, including the law of armed conflict and human rights law. Although the regime's many atrocities are well documented, we believe that the building of a crematorium is an effort to cover up the extent of the mass murders taking place in Saydnaya. He said the American claim about the crematorium is based on information from the U.S. intelligence community and humanitarian groups. Jones did not give an official estimate about how many people have been killed at Saydnaya. But he noted that Amnesty International reported that between 5,000 and 11,000 people had died at the prison between 2011 and 2015. He said the Syrian government had detained between 65,000 and 117,000 people over the same four-year period. The State Department released newly declassified satellite photographs of what it said is a building at the prison used as a crematorium. The latest photo was from January 2015. It was not immediately clear why the United States waited to declassify the evidence. I'm Katie Weaver.
A measure called the Presidential Memorandum regarding the Mexico City policy will likely affect the lives of many women in developing countries. The memorandum was among the first executive orders signed by Donald Trump after he became President of the United States. It changes government policy about the way foreign aid is given to other countries. With the order, Trump brought back a rule that bans the use of foreign aid by international organizations that support abortion. It is called the Mexico City Policy. This policy dates back to 1984, when Ronald Reagan was the U.S. president. He announced it at a population conference in Mexico City. Under the policy, international organizations are barred from using foreign aid to pay for a medical operation to end a pregnancy. Since then, this rule has been put in place when a member of the Republican Party is president. It is canceled when a Democrat becomes president. Melissa Israel is with the Heritage Foundation, a conservative policy group in Washington, D.C.
The guiding principle for our policy really needs to be rooted in the respect for the most important fundamental human right of all, and that's the right to life.
The policy change was expected when Republican Donald Trump became president, but observers did not expect him to expand the rule. Amanda Klassing is a researcher at Human Rights Watch, which opposes the policy.
We expanded it to include about $9.5 billion worth of U.S. funding on global health. So that includes HIV funding, maternal and child health, nutrition, prevention of childhood diseases.
For nonprofit groups to receive U.S. aid, they must not perform abortions or provide any information about them, even if they use their own money for abortion services. Klassing says the expansion of the Mexico City policy will prove harmful to women's health.
It means that when a doctor sits down with a woman, if she has a health complication and she's entitled under her local law to access a safe abortion, that doctor cannot give her a referral or provide her the information that she needs to take care of herself.
The World Health Organization says there are about 56 million abortions every year. More than half of the operations take place in developing countries. In Kenya, Lisa Maringo Kimbo is the director of IPAS Africa Alliance. The alliance says it is a global non-governmental organization dedicated to ending preventable deaths and disabilities from unsafe abortion.
Trump's global gag rule will have a direct and devastating effect on women in Kenya and in sub-Saharan Africa in several ways. This will lead to more unwanted pregnancies. It will lead to more unsafe abortion, increased death of women and young women, and even increased number of newborn deaths.
Other countries have begun to take steps to reduce the effects of the U.S. policy. In the Netherlands, people have created a program called She Decides, and in Britain, there are plans for a conference called Family Planning 2020. Both efforts will try to bring together countries that provide aid and countries that need it. I'm Jill Robbins.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. Many English learners work hard to improve their pronunciation skills. If you are not making as much progress as you'd hoped, you are not alone. You may be surprised to know that a number of teachers do not know how to effectively teach this skill. Judy Gilbert is a pronunciation expert. She has written many books on the subject. A few years ago, Gilbert gave a talk at the New School, a private university in New York City. She explained that for the past 50 years, most English language teachers have not been trained to teach pronunciation. For years, teachers mainly demonstrated the pronunciation of individual sounds, such as the W sound in the word what. But individual sounds are only one part of pronunciation, as we noted in an earlier Education Tips story. Other elements include rhythm, intonation, and stress, the loudness you give to part or all of a word or words. These qualities together make up the system of spoken English. In everyday speech, some words and sounds are almost always pronounced fully and clearly, while others are reduced and less clear. William Stout teaches English as a foreign language at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. He has been leading pronunciation workshops for 10 years. He says the goal in improving your pronunciation should be communicating to be easily understood, not removing your accent, which is often difficult or impossible.
Stout says one of the most important things you can do to improve your pronunciation is to learn how to listen to English effectively. And a big part of doing this is to recognize and understand reduced English words when you hear them. Stout says his pronunciation workshops mainly center on training his students' ears to listen for these things.
Someone might say, what do you want to get him for his birthday? And in this case, even beginner students can usually hear the content words, what, get, birthday, and they can guess the meaning. But the words in between are reduced.
And you can hear how some words join together to sound almost like one word. For example, the words get him sound like get him. The letter H in him disappears, and the vowel sound in that word is shortened. And the letter T in get changes to a D sound. In everyday speech, some words are almost always reduced. These words can include pronouns, helping verbs such as can or do, conjunctions, articles, and prepositions. Other parts of speech are almost always pronounced clearly, such as nouns, verbs, adjectives, and adverbs. Stout says that knowing these rules can help you train your ears more effectively. And this can help you reproduce the sounds of everyday English speech so that you are more easily understood.
Stout enjoys using songs and song-like material in his classes. These things reproduce the natural rhythm, intonation, and stress of conversational English. Listening to songs, says Stout, can help speed up your progress.
I think songs are a nice way to practice, and I found that students who like to sing in English generally improve their pronunciation very quickly.
In class, he plays a song or other example of natural speech and asks students to write down what they hear. Then, the class talks about which words were reduced and how. Listen for reduced words and sounds in this limerick.
There was an old man from Tyrannum who ground his false teeth till he bent them. When they asked him the cost of what he had lost, he said, I can't say because I rent them.
Did you notice the reductions? There are many. One example is the dropped H in the pronouns his, him, and he. Note that the word till means until, and cuz means because. In English conversation, Americans often shorten these words, just as the limerick does. Stout also uses jazz chants, a method popularized by book author and songwriter Carolyn Graham. Listen for the stressed words in this jazz chant.
Where does John live? He lives near the bank. Where does he work? He works at the bank. When does he work? He works all day and he works all night at the bank, at the bank, at the great big bank.
Here are two suggestions for using these methods.
William Stout says, as you listen to fast-paced English in songs, films, and other natural speech, try to notice all of the words that are reduced. Then,
you can work on imitating just one phrase or a sentence several times. But my main advice is not to wait. And you can improve your pronunciation at all levels of proficiency, and the sooner you start to notice the patterns of English pronunciation, the sooner you're going to improve. And that way you don't develop bad pronunciation habits that are hard to change over time.
Stout advises that you let go of the fear of not sounding like yourself when you're practicing English conversation.
A big part of how we define ourselves, a big part of our identity, is in the way we talk, the way we sound. But sometimes we just need to take on a new personality in the way we speak in a different language. We should just take chances. I think that's an important aspect, is being willing to take chances and sound different to yourself.
And again, improving your pronunciation is not about completely removing your accent.
I find that most Americans like to hear an accent so long as they can easily understand what the person is saying.
Remember, the goal is to be understood, not to sound like a native English speaker. I'm Phil Dierking.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.